listening to Old New Borrowed Blue on 2SER with your host, Joel Kassam.
Good morning, good evening, or good night, wherever you may be listening, and welcome to Old New Borrowed Blue here on 2SER, 2SER.com, and on iTunes. Old New Borrowed Blue is a show where each week I'm joined by a very special guest, and they pick four of their favourite songs to play and explain why they chose those tracks. We also discuss how they became the person they are today. All right, let's find out who we've got this week. My guest today plays a huge part in helping young kids get themselves a better education. Working with Reconciliation Australia, she helps build resources and support communities via an online platform that focuses on educating educators so they feel comfortable talking about Australia's black history. Welcome to the show, Zoe Vita.
Hey!
How are you, Zoe?
I am absolutely amazing today, Joel. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for coming in. We'll get to all the amazing work you do shortly, but let's start at the beginning. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Tweed Heads. Which is northern New South Wales, mm-hmm. but I was born in a small town called Ocean Shores, which is fairly close to Lismore area. So I am a Bundjalung woman, so water woman from up that way, and am one of four.
Okay.
Yes.
Very interesting. You, when did you move down to Sydney?
I moved down to Sydney in 2007, so I was 15 going on 16 years old. And I came down to finish school. So I went from a co-ed public sporting school to an all-girls private boarding school. And it was weird, to be completely honest. It was bizarre.
Did you move down on your own or with family?
I moved down on my own.
Yeah.
So I'm the youngest of the four. My brother was down here already for uni. And he basically made the suggestion of boarding school because I was the last one in the house with good old mumsy. So I was like, yeah, why not? And came down to Sydney. So it was just my brother and I. Had cousins and aunties and stuff, but years apart. So it was kind of one of those things that, although they were in Sydney, it was very much just my brother and I and me in a boarding house next to some nuns.
It must have been such a daunting experience for having, you know, growing up in this public school to coming down to the Sydney, like the big smoke.
It was bloody crazy because everything here is so much bigger and faster. I don't know if you've ever been to Tweed Heads, but it is very cruisy. Shoes are optional. You can walk around town and it's just, you skip school to go to the beach and it's amazing.
Okay.
Sydney is just big buildings. It's lots of cars and very, very loud. So massive wake-up call.
Yeah.
Massive wake-up call.
You've already mentioned your Aboriginal heritage or the area you grew up in.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about all of that? Where did you...
So Bundjalung is my language group.
Yeah.
It's a nation. So you've got countries and you've got nations. When I say country, I mean country with a capital C. And basically Bundjalung consists of a number of different language groups or countries within that. So I am from the era of the Arbuckle peoples, which is Pelican of Goanna. And then I was raised in Minjibul country of Bundjalung. So that's where, yeah, I get my Aboriginal heritage from. I get that also from my father's side. And I also have a mixed heritage in regards to my background as well. But I would have to say my Aboriginal identity, so I'm a Bundjalung Dube, Bundjalung woman, would be my strongest that I identify with. My mum is Lebanese and Irish. My biological father is Portuguese and Aboriginal. So a bit of an eclectic mix, you know?
Yeah, pretty much all over the world.
Yep.
Your current role with Reconciliation Australia.
It is a mouthful.
It is. What do you do there? Can you explain what you do?
Yeah, so I work in the Narragunawali team, which is Reconciliation in Schools and Early Learning Services. So that particular program of Reconciliation Australia focuses on supporting teachers and educators to bring Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander histories, perspectives, contributions, and just the history of Australia very much into the classroom and school setting. but also help them build relationships with their local community, because we think that that's very much lacking. And history isn't taught the way it should be in the Australian curriculum. They say that they've got it present. They ask teachers to teach Aboriginal history. But if you don't have the resources, or if you were never taught it yourself, what are the likelihoods that you're going to teach it to others? So, for example, I grew up in Tweed Heads, and my Aboriginal history was the length of 2 weeks and started in 1788. You have over 60,000 years of knowledge in the lands, the waterways, and in the skies. And Aboriginal science is only just a new concept that people are taking up, but it's been there this whole time. And it's one of those things that people don't teach that. And when you look at things like the current Change the Date campaign, or the debate, it's really bizarre that people aren't exactly sure what we're debating it for. When you think about it, you've got a ship that comes in and Europeans decide to take over a land through massacres, through wars, like frontier wars, and claim that the land was empty so that they could claim it. And you've got so much devastation and pain with that. And it's just not taught in schools the way it should be. So Narraganawali helps teachers feel comfortable by giving them support through the resources, so they can go on their own professional learning, so that they can have, I like to call them jigsaw puzzles, or jigsaw puzzle pieces. They're actions that you can have, such as the impact of flying the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander flags in front of your school is massive for your local community, because it says that you at least acknowledge that we exist. And then having different actions, like having an acknowledgement at the assemblies, knowing the traditional language name of the place that your school or service is based. Small steps can have a massive impact, and that's where we come in, to kind of support educators to feel safe in that space that they've never really felt safe in before. And we found that it's now is the time when conversations are happening, where people are more open-minded about it and are interested, and genuinely so. It's not tokenistic. It is very genuine.
I mean, you know, you say that now, and you say that these days it definitely is becoming more of a conversation and people are talking about it more, and we seem to be like, oh, this is right. We should be, you know, changing the date and all this sort of stuff. But then I think back to, you know, when I was back at school, like 4,000 years ago. And
sorry, how many years ago was that?
4,000. And I don't even remember learning Aboriginal history at all. You know, like,
said
for you it was 2 weeks. It does seem really bizarre because it's such a huge history. And I think, personally, we just didn't know, like, because we weren't taught it at school, and so we had no idea about the history of Australia. You know, it is.
Yep. And that's the thing. You're not a minority. It's the majority of this country aren't educated on it. And it's one of those things so part of my other role is with Reconciliation Australia, is we help externals develop resources. So SBS, the You Are Here series, really amazing documentaries. We help build the education resources for that. But it's one of those things that we have found that people, until they see those kind of documentaries or First Contact, for example, people didn't realise the extent of the Stolen Generations.
Mm.
The fact that the Stolen Generations were happening up until the 70s, and now we've got a new Stolen Generations that's kind of occurring around the country, with kids being taken into family care without their real families actually knowing, and not having a chance to kind of fight to keep the kids with them. And it's really horrible to think that the memories of those Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander young ones aren't being acknowledged, and the battles that you have when you've got parents that go off to war, Aboriginal men and women that went off to war, basically because they were going to get a better wage for fighting for this country than if they didn't and stayed at home. And they would eventually come home, some of them, to find that their kids have been taken, or that they weren't allowed to go drinking in the pubs with the men that they fought beside, because that was just the way it was. And it's horrible that that kind of stuff isn't really taught, because what we focus on is we're not looking for pity, we're not looking for sympathy, we're looking to move forward. And the only way that we can move forward is through historical acceptance, when you acknowledge the past, say that, yeah, Australia, we fucked up and we totally horrendously treated the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. But what are we going to do about it next? We can't change the past, but we can change the present and we can move to a more positive future. And that's all we want. We don't want people to feel sorry for us. We want to be able to help ourselves. And I think education is really key to that. And having these young ones being able to identify, feel pride in who they are as an Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander young one. I'm a light-skinned Aboriginal, and I battled with my identity growing up. And kids are very much the same, and it's how do you support them to understand that being Aboriginal is good? When all they get told is, we're drug addicts, me being a female means I'm going to be a victim of domestic violence, it's going to be drugs, and I'm not going to have a job. I got a uni degree. I haven't been out of work since I was 12 going on 13. Like, but hey, you're Aboriginal, so you're going nowhere. And it's like, oh God, come on.
Yeah. You're obviously very, very passionate about all of this, about your role. What got you into this current role?
I very much fell into it. So I studied education at uni. So I'm an English and history high school teacher. And I went straight from uni to work with the National Centre of Indigenous Excellence in Redfern, helped develop the Indigenous Digital Excellence program there, and got that program to a point where it was going. So the first year that we ran it, the proper IDX program, we went to 4 different rural and remote Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities. Then it got funded to a point where the program was going to go to 10. And I thought that that was a good time for me to take a step back and allow somebody else to come through so that they could actually teach other communities and stuff and bring new knowledge. And I just happened to come across my manager, Alex Shane, who gave me a buzz, basically, and was like, hey, heard you do good stuff. And I was like, I heard you guys do too. And then that was it. It was, for me, the perfect fit, because I'm going to retire as a teacher, basically. And this way I can influence policies and things nationally in our education system specifically. And that to me was just an amazing kind of role to be able to pick up and run with. So just very lucky to kind of fall into this role, and have just been rolling with it ever since.
Zoe, there is so much more we've got to talk about, but first we should get into your old song. What have you chosen?
I have chosen a classic for me, Van Morrison's Domino. And the reason why I chose this is Van Morrison, I grew up listening to him, and it just reminds me of summer days in the lounge room with my mum and dad drunkenly dancing around and causing mayhem. And it's just a catchy tune.
It is. It's a great song. I love this choice. This is Van Morrison with Domino.
I said, oh. That just meant it didn't call.
Yes, Van Morrison there with Domino, including Zoe dancing in the background.
You can't help it.
It's such a great song. What are some of the other things that Reconciliation Australia do?
So Reconciliation Australia has a couple of different programs or branches within it. So Narraganawali is an education-specific program, but you also have the Workplace Wraps. So this is probably the flagship of Reconciliation Australia. So it's one of the longest programs of the organisation itself. And that helps corporates, governments, non-profits build a reconciliation action plan that's similar to Narraganawali, helps them build a stronger or more culturally safe environment for their workplace and provides steps towards building it to be more culturally appropriate as well, and providing opportunities for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people within that corporate or organisation. And we provide a lot of advice around how to do that appropriately. So building those relationships with community is really, really important. And that's kind of what all of RA pushes for anybody that kind of gets in contact. But our Workplace Wraps team do a stellar job in regards to they walk organisations through it. They teach them where to go to improve. And then the organisations have these beautiful documents that have a lot of really quality stuff. And the idea behind that is we need to work together in order to actually come together. So you're not going to have a reconciled country. And reconciliation is even a funny word to use because the argument is you can't reconcile something that wasn't conciliated in the first place. But which I agree with, I do, but it's one of those things, for us, you need to work with the resources that you have, build opportunities for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people to come within your organisation or company and work together to heal, essentially. Have those awkward conversations where you ask all of these questions that you want to know the answer to and find out more about Australia's Black history, find out more about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures, because my identity as an Aboriginal woman is also yours as an Australian. That's a thing. Like, we're all in this beautiful country, so why not work together, learn it, and feel pride when you hear it. The other programs that we have is our comms team. So they do a wonderful job in regards to seeing what's happening around town. By around town, I mean around the country, and working with different organisations to help promote stories as well as to find out things that are happening around reconciliation in the different communities. And then we have our policies team. So we try to advise the government in the best way that we can. Good old Aussie government. we try to push Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander stuff and things onto the government's plates to make sure that they consider Australia's First Peoples in the decisions that they make. And we hope that it's making a difference. It's one of those things that these days you never know with government, but we like to think that we're making some kind of change. But yes.
Okay, so have you done any other roles or been a part of any other programs within Reconciliation Australia?
No. So no? I've only been with RA for just over a year, and I am very comfortable in my education seat. I don't think I could advise a corporate or company because, my goodness, I would have no idea where to start. But education is where it's at for me. So I'm 100% happy to sit here and plug away on the platform, build resources, and hopefully build the next generation of educators in a much better way. So, yeah.
Okay, so what did you do prior to this?
Prior to this, so I spent, as I mentioned earlier, I used to work for the National Centre of Indigenous Excellence, or NCIE, and I worked with them for 3 years. And we developed workshops around technologies and Aboriginal science. So it initially started as an online platform, a social media site similar to Facebook, but it was for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people only, because social media has a bucket load of racism. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to give people a safe space to chat online, to also get support from, I was trying to tee up Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander doctors, health workers and stuff like that, so you could have that conversation and support young ones around that kind of stuff and see the importance of health. But everyone was still using Facebook. So we canned that and went for something much more exciting in my head. And that was playing with robots. And that was bloody cool. Lego and robots are my ideal of heaven. And so we used Lego robots to basically allow community members to teach stories and for us to be able to teach traditional knowledge. So as a Bundjalung woman, I could never tell you Gadigal stories. I don't have permission for that. We're currently on Gadigal country. So I wanted to bring content that was relevant to place. So we worked with Maclay Museum, which is at Sydney University, who are currently going through repatriation of their Indigenous artifacts collection to find out where their pieces actually belong and send them back home if they actually wanted. And we got photos of different artifacts that were found in Springwood and down in Guringai country, which is down a bit south. And these are tools that were found and used. People would have held them thousands of years ago. They were dated to thousands of years ago. And we used the robots, designed an obstacle course to then land a robot on top, and a kid would then turn that image over and find out what that was, if we knew it, the traditional name, and how it was used, so that they'd find that bit of knowledge about place, which is really, really cool. And the kids seemed to enjoy it. And then in addition to that, I learned how to 3D print and how to do CAD designing, which is a pain in the butt if you don't have the patience for it. Oh my God, it's so finicky. But we saw 3D printing as a way for a rural or remote community to be self-sustainable. We got to travel, I'll tell you a bit more about that in a second, but we got to travel to these communities who you would fly on this tiny shoebox of a plane for an hour and a half, and that was the way in. Or you would have road trains that would be their main delivery, and that was when it wasn't flood season. So you only had 6 or 7 or 8 months a year where you could actually get traffic in and out of that community. And imagine if the main machines broke down, you had to pay for them and a couple hundred bucks. Then you had to pay a couple hundred bucks for the shipping. Then you have to wait 6 months for it to bloody come. Imagine if you could 3D print those pieces.
Yeah.
20 cents would be the value of that using a 3D printer. So you could allow a community, if you taught the young ones, to actually be self-sustainable. Bloody amazing.
Yeah.
So that's why we went down that path. And then the other one that we did was basic coding. So I can do, in the basest form, I can build games. And we use that as a way of, because you could do voice recording as well. And Canada have this beautiful game called Not Alone. And it's the community elders did the voiceover of this beautiful game that brought kids' attention back to culture, where your character would actually go on a cultural journey to understand and learn all these different traditions and stuff like that. So we thought, well, why don't we do something around language? So kids build the game, kids teach the elders how to use the game, and the elders teach language. So the concept was technologies was the pathway to re-engage in culture. And so that's what I did for 3 years, and it was bloody amazing.
Yeah, that,
yep.
What? That's such wonderful work. I mean, that's something to be very proud of. I do want to ask you about traveling though, because that must be so interesting, traveling around Australia, going to these very rural communities. Have you got any strange stories or anything funny that ever happened?
Oh gosh, do I ever. So yes, going to these rural and remote communities was absolutely amazing. And it's one of those things that you learn so much more than you ever teach when it comes to going out to these communities. And one of these places is a small town of Gumbalanya, which is, we flew into Darwin, and then it was an hour and a half shoebox plane to this community that was completely surrounded by billabong. And it had a population of, I think it was around 1,500. Mm-hmm. The nearest town was an hour and a bit drive out of the community. But my colleague and I, we landed. We got picked up in a ute. Basically, it's community run. So we had a cousin of someone who was part of the school that we were working in came, picked us up at that little airport, dropped us off. We're like, yep, sweet. We decided we want to explore a little bit. So we start walking around town. And all of a sudden, we hear, like, this laugh from these kids. Like, oh, this is awesome. Because before that, it was like a ghost town. No one was around. All of a sudden, this bloody horse starts running down the street. And these kids are chasing it. And we're like, oh, my goodness. Like, do we get out of the way? What is happening? Because there's just this big horse out of nowhere. And turns out, the horse is called Scooby-Doo.
Of course.
Yep, of course. And lives in town. He's owned by one of the community members who just keeps him in his backyard,
yeah.
As you do. And these kids were just like, oh, here's Scooby-Doo. And as soon as they saw us, they started spitting language at us, and they were telling us all these different words and, like, trying to teach us and asking all of these questions because we clearly stood out.
Yeah.
And it was just so beautiful because they're like, oh, yes, here's Scooby-Doo. He's our favourite horse. He does everything. He just keeps running around. He'll come into the school sometimes. He stole somebody's clothes one time. I was like, oh my gosh. So this is Gumbalanya.
That's what you must have hundreds of wonderful stories like that, I would assume.
It's the same community that has crocodiles that sit out in the backyard of the school. Yep. It's surrounded by billabong. And I was like, so they've literally got a chicken fence that separates the billabong and the schoolyard. And you can, like, see gingers, the crocodiles are just chilling there in the water. And one of the teachers basically was like, he had been there for about a month or two, and all of a sudden he gets this knock on the door from these kids. Sir, do you want to buy a crocodile? They were selling, they had literally, these kids had caught this crocodile and had wrapped its mouth around, so it was still alive, but they were just like, they've wrapped it up, and they're just like, yeah, do you want it? So then they went and they killed it and they gave him the tail.
Unbelievable. When I was at school, all you could see was footballs that you kicked over the fence and couldn't get them back.
Yep.
These kids are seeing crocodiles and catching them. That's incredible. I would love to find out 100 more stories, but we can't right now. I have to go to your new song. What have you chosen and why?
AB Original. This is January 26th. So I have chosen this because Briggs and Dan Sultan, like, come on. First of all, amazing. But also in regards to the current debate around changing the date, this song speaks very true in regards to what that relevance is and what January 26th means to us, which is survival. It's we can't celebrate this kind of a day because of the devastating history. So why not make it a different day? Like, it wasn't until the 90s that January 26th was actually selected as Australia Day. So why not move it to one of the other dates that it was before?
Yeah.
But yeah, powerful song. Love it.
Okay. It's a bit of very apt. January 26th, AV original.
You can call it what you want, but it just don't mean a thing. No, it just don't mean a thing.
Fuck that, honey.
You can come and wave your flag, but it don't mean a thing to me. No, it just don't mean a thing.
Fuck that, honey.
You can call it what you want, but it just don't mean a thing. No, it just don't mean a thing.
Fuck that, honey.
You can come and wave your flag, but it don't mean a thing to me. No, it just don't mean a thing.
Fuck that, honey.
They said, hey, Briggs, pick a date.
Okay.
You know what? We can celebrate.
For sure.
But we can come together, yeah. Talk about the weather, call that Australia Day. I said, how about March 8th?
That's a good one.
And we can do it on your nan's grave.
Oh, that bitch.
We can piss up, piss on her face, get lit up and burn out like Mark Skates. The screaming love it and leave it. I got more reason to be a riff, you can believe it. Once the loot constitutional, who's underneath it? Turn that flag to a noose, put a cease to your breathing. I can't get on my whip, I get a ticket for that. I get an EWB, and that's a drop in my split. I turn the other cheek, I get a knife on my back. And I tell them it hurts, they say I overreact. So fuck that.
You can call it what you want, but it just don't mean a thing. No, it just don't mean a thing.
Celebrate the heretic anytime outside Jan 26. That's the day for them suckers doing that sucker shit. That's that land taking, flag waving attitude. Got this new Captain Cook dance to show you how to move. How you wanna raise a flag with a rifle that make us wanna celebrate anything but survival? Nah, you watching telly for The Bachelor, but wouldn't read a book about a fuckload of massacres. I remember all the blood and what carried us. They remember 20 recipes for lamingtons. Yeah, their ancestors got a boat ride. Both minds saw them coming until they both died. Fuck celebrating days made of misery. Why Oz still got the black history? And that shirt will get you banned from the parliament. If you ain't having a conversation, well then we starting it.
You can call it what you want, but it just don't mean a thing. No, it just don't mean a thing.
Fuck that, honey.
You can come and wave your flag, but it don't mean a thing to me. No, it just don't mean a thing.
Yes, January 26th there, AB Original featuring Dan Sultan. You've done a bit of TV and radio work before, haven't you? You've appeared on TV and...
Yes.
What sort of stuff have you done?
A couple of times. So I was on NITV. I did my first cameo on NITV News. I did a segment in regards to the NCIE's program and IDX and what we were doing. And then I also did... another program on NITV where we spoke about racism and what's happening in the country and the role of culture in regards to bringing about awareness of our cultural presence and the importance of acknowledging where people come from. So I was one of four in a panel and we had migrant representatives as well as non-Indigenous Australians and myself, and we were basically having a conversation about what are the important next steps in regards to coming together, and why should we acknowledge all of our cultures and all of our histories in this country rather than focusing on kind of the, for want of a better term, the white kind of Australia. It's we have an eclectic mix of cultures here. Let's embrace it. And talking through some of the issues that a lot of people are facing, which is really, really hard, because we're Aboriginal people, we're not alone in regards to the health issues that we face. And having a chat to immigrants and stuff like that, it's really obvious that there is a massive disadvantage to the colour of your skin in times. And so we was having a bit of a conversation around that, and also around AFL, because I play AFL and Goodsy was there, and it was kind of amazing. I definitely had a fangirl moment. So talking about all of that.
With the future of Australia, this is probably a two-part question.
Oh dear.
Where do you see Australia heading, and where would you like it to go?
Where I see Australia going. Look, I see Australia taking two steps forward, one step back in every way, because we have the apology in 2008. Great. Nothing really happened from that. What do we have? And then it kind of gently progresses. We've got cities around the country that are now saying that they're not going to celebrate Australia Day on January 26th. Fantastic. But then you have a large number of the community of media personalities berating those cities for not celebrating it on January 26th. So it's kind of like you've got minorities that are starting to voice and step up and really take charge in this change. But then you have a lot of people that have influence that seem to really beat down on it and kind of push those concepts back, which makes it really, really hard. So I do see Australia making some positive progress and steps towards more strongly incorporating Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander stuff and things into both the business world and the education sector. I see a lot of that, though, coming from the ground up, which is really good. It's a bit unfortunate that the government isn't as supportive as we'd like, but having people that are wanting to step up, that are actually joining us in the rallies against the incarceration rates and stuff like that, is really, really powerful for us to see, because it's not just Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people anymore. It's people of all different cultures that are standing with us. So I see it getting better. It's just not going to be quick enough, I don't think. Where I want it to be, I want every single young one, doesn't matter their culture, doesn't matter their background, doesn't matter where they come from, doesn't matter the colour of their skin, I want every single young one to know the true history of this country. And that started with 60,000 plus years of beautiful knowledge and awareness of the country that we're on, and then 250 years of massacres, stolen generations, of health issues, of incarceration, but also of those small wins. We had Dave Unipon, who's on the $50 note, is an Aboriginal inventor, and you have all these different success stories that we just don't hear about. But I want people to hear about them, and I want people to know that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander history and culture is here. It's still alive, still present, and I want people to feel proud of having that as part of their history. And I want kids to be at home with their families, and I want us to celebrate Australia for what it is together. So we'll see when that happens, but hopefully sooner rather than later.
If you had a message for the people of Australia, what would it be?
Oh, Jesus. A message for people of Australia is we're willing to share our stories and our cultures if you're willing to listen. And it's not going to be an easy road, and it's not going to be a quick road. It's going to be long and hard because you've got a lot of healing to do first. So sit and listen and enjoy in the fact that our history is your history, our culture is your culture, and it's your responsibility as an Australian to make sure that it continues in whatever way that you can. So please do it, because it's a beautiful culture and it has so much, and it's so diverse. I say culture in singular when it should be in plural. Like, we have over 250 language groups within this country. And it's absolutely amazing, the kind of stories and that connection that you can have with every single waterway within your language group, within your country, within your nation, with every single rock and tree, with every mountain. There is a story, and it's one of those things that it's there. Just tap into it. So, yeah, it's a long message, but...
No, that's very nicely said, Zoe. I really like that. We do have to play your borrowed song now.
Yes.
What have you chosen?
I've chosen Edge of 17. So the original was by Stevie Nicks, but this is The Wind and the Wave, and I absolutely love it. If you just close your eyes and just picture you're just on a highway and you're just driving into the sunset and just got like the rolling or the outback going through, this tune is exactly for that moment.
Okay, this is Edge of 17 by The Wind and the Wave.
Just like the white winged dove sings a song, sounds like she's singing.
Hey!
standing in love. Yeah, yeah, with a flood of tears that no one really ever fall at all. Well, I went searching for an answer up the stairs and down the hall, not to find an answer.
Yes, The Wind and the Wave there, Edge of 17. My tracks today are chosen by my very special guest, Zoe Vita. Zoe, what do you like to do when you're not saving the country?
When I'm not saving the country? First of all, thank you for that compliment. When I'm not saving the country, I play footy, so I play AFL. I am very short, for those listening. I'm absolutely tiny, so I just run. A bucket load. Turns out I'm quick, which is good. And I love watching NRL. FYI, I have just won a family competition in NRL footy tipping.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yep, just want to throw that in there. I love sport. And I also love to paint and draw, which is my downtime. And yeah, that's what I like to do.
I remember hearing a story about you playing AFL and you dislocated a finger mid-game.
Oh, yes.
And spent basically the rest of the game just trying to put it back in yourself.
Yeah. That was last season. If you've ever watched Harry Potter and you see a wand snap, my finger kind of looked like a bent wand. It was in all sorts of angles. It wasn't even halfway through the game. It was halfway through the first quarter. So had travelled all the way over to Manly to play on that side of the bridge. And my partner, he'd just gotten a coffee and had just gotten a bacon egg roll. And all of a sudden, I'm like, Kyle, I need to go to the hospital. And he's like, what do you mean? And they only served in mugs, so there weren't takeaway. And so he was so angry because he couldn't drink his coffee and he had to take me to the hospital. He couldn't look at my finger. But I was sitting there and I had a nurse come and try to put it back in. I had a doctor come in and no one could do it. It ended up just being a surgeon who had been working on somebody's elbow, like a couple of doors down, was just like, the longer it's out, the worse it's going to be. So he was like, yep, just 1, 2, boom. And I was just like, all right. And that was it. So it's still got a bit of a wonky knuckle. And this season, I've actually done some damage to my other hand. I think it's just fingers are a nuisance in here.
I think so, especially for you.
Like I said, I'm short, so it's just... I don't know. It might just be me just catching the ball in the wrong direction with my hands.
But yeah. I know. This is the most visual show on radio. I'm currently looking at Zoe's fingers. And yes, it is. This one here on your left hand is still quite bruised and puffy.
It is still puffy. It's also quite crooked. Basically, it's broken. But I just didn't I didn't bother going to the hospital because I was like, you know what? They're just going to put a splint on it and I'm not going to be able to use it. Look, it's fine.
It's fine, no, yeah.
It's sort of straight. It's sort of straight and fine.
No point wasting time
exactly.
getting it fixed. Now, I get sent a lot of bios and most of the time people put, you know, I love to do this and I love this and this and this. You added that things you hate. Now, this never happens. And two things you hate are eggplant and coriander.
They're gross. They're just gross. I don't know how you can eat it. Yeah, I thought instead of the moonlit walks along the beach, I thought I would throw in stuff that I hated. And these are two things that I'm very passionately against having on my plate at any given time. So I will pick off coriander, or if there's too much coriander, it's too mixed in, I won't eat a meal. I don't know. It's just one of those things. I heard from somebody, you know, those statistics. I don't know if I can guarantee it or not, so don't hold this against me. But coriander, apparently, you either love it or you hate it, and it's in your genes. Like, certain people love it, certain people don't, and you can relate it to your DNA. DNA is a funny thing. But, yeah, no to coriander. Eggplant is just weird. It's kind of a mix between slimy and chewy, and now it's a weird emoji for the male appendage. I just don't agree with it being on my plate.
I couldn't agree with you more. Zoe Beta, this has been really eye-opening. I hope a lot of people take away some very important messages from this episode. It's been great having you in here. Thank you so much for coming down. And now you actually have to take us out with your blues song. So what have you picked?
Thank you very much for having me. And I have picked Tiny Dancer by Elton John. Blue Jean Baby. Come on. This is just one of those classics. You can't help but sing along to drunkenly in a bar. So I had to pick it. Okay.
Thank you very much. So this is Tiny Dancer by The Rocket Man.
Slowly. lovely.